Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Tate Talks. Today I had a great chat with my old friend Rick Yates. We spoke about everything from how he got into distribution to what he's up to now and lots of other stuff in between. He's the most requested guest we've ever had on Tate Talks, with literally a handful of people suggesting him. So hope you enjoy. Hi, Rick. Thanks so much for joining us today on Tate Talks.
Thank you, Chris. It's an honour to be here. It's been a while since I've been able to speak with you, and I'm looking forward to being part of the episode.
Yeah, me too. And I think I mentioned before, you're the most requested guest we've ever had on Tate Talks. So no pressure, but we're expecting some solid gold content.
Wow, okay, no pressure at all then. So how many people requested me?
I can't divulge the exact figure, but suffice to say, I could probably count it on one hand, but
I've made it now. I've hit the big time.
Absolutely.
I can clearly be classified as a influencer.
100%. And I was thinking before I came on the call, I think one of the last times we spoke properly was when I recorded a podcast with you in Manchester. I guess that was probably 3 or 4 years ago now. Doesn't seem like it, but guess so.
Yeah, I remember that well. And we were in Manchester, and it was before COVID, and it was before I was still working at Zedsphere, which was my distribution business. So I think maybe I sold that company about 2 or 3 months after that podcast. So, and that was almost three years ago that I left there now. So it's been a while.
Okay. So I'd like to think that maybe my input probably added to the valuation of the business then, possibly.
They actually said to me, you know, you've had Chris Tate on your podcast, so actually we're going to increase your company valuation by a multiple of 6. So I was like, well, brilliant. I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, any other vendors listening that are looking for an exit, let me know and we'll get on the podcast and maybe work out some kind of deal. So let's get going then. So for those that don't know you, can you maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, or maybe something that even people that do know about you probably don't know?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm Rick Yates, and I've been kind of floating around the MSP world now for, about 10 years. And I kind of fell into this industry by accident, because I'm not a techie. I'm more of a salesperson. And I started a software distribution business back in 2014 that was really focused on selling software to resellers. And I started this company and started selling a bit of cybersecurity software. And just coincidentally, it was actually MSPs that were coming to us and, you know, were our most frequent customers. I had Webroot at the time. I was selling Webroot, which was the hot next generation endpoint protection tool. And so I created a sister company to the organization that we had in place, and we kind of went really deep on the MSP market and started selling MSP specific products. So I did that for a few years, and I sold that company in 2020, just around the advent of coronavirus. So I'd made a little bit of money, but I couldn't go anywhere and spend it and celebrate because it was locked down. And I kind of ended up getting into doing a bit of consultancy. I created my own little brand called MSPX, and that worked out pretty well. Spent some time doing some consultancy for MSPs, and something that I've been focused on quite a lot because of my experience as a distributor is trying to help vendors get into the MSP space, because I know so many vendors struggle with that. And having worked with lots of vendors trying to get into the MSP space, I felt as though some of my experience might be quite valuable. And so after I'd done a bit of consultancy, I got the opportunity to actually jump into a very enterprise focused vendor called Proofpoint, and help them deliver an MSP strategy for the EMEA market. And, you know, that really brings us up to the present day.
Yeah, that's a great summary. But just jumping back to the beginning of the sort of distribution side, you said that MSPs were kind of knocking on your door. I mean, were you aware of MSPs at that point? Or in fact, I guess taking it a step back even further, you say you decided to set up a distribution business to sell sort of software to resellers. I mean, where did, if you're not from a technical background, where did that idea come from? How did you kind of have that initial seed?
Well, I was very fortunate. So I spent most of my career either selling stuff or doing marketing or doing some kind of customer engagement or customer relations style role. I've always been very interested in brand and reputation and how to build trust with customers and that kind of thing. And actually coming out of the back of the credit crunch way back in the day in 2008, I'd been working at Manchester Airport as kind of like a brand manager. I used to walk around every Monday with all the directs and identify things that were wrong with the airport that needed fixing. And, you know, I ended up kind of getting made redundant got into this random job doing, working for like a national housing maintenance company on a customer experience role. And I'd had enough of that after a couple of years. And I met my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, Chelsea. She was training to be a lawyer. And she came home one day and said, I'm using this software at work and it's a bit rubbish. I wish there was a piece of software that would allow me to go and find precedent case law or legal information just based on a search that I could use. And I thought, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. And, you know, we were young and naive. And I said, well, why don't we try and build an app? Or why don't we try and build something that can do that? So we thought, oh, that's a fantastic idea. We called the company My Learned Friend. And the idea was that it would be a crowdsource application for legal information. So we would have lawyers contribute information, and then other lawyers could come and, you know, take information away, that kind of thing. And I went and got a business startup loan from the government, £10,000. And I found a developer, a local developer, who was willing to build a, I guess, what you might call like a minimum viable product. And he said, it'll cost £18,000 for me to build this. And I said, well, I've got 10 grand. If I give all of it to you right now in cash, will you build it for me? And he said, yes. And I naively handed over £10,000 in cash in a cafe in Bristol to someone who had only met twice. And thankfully, he did build something, but it took him a very long time, almost 2 years, by which point we needed to do something with it. So I managed to get into a business angel network because I obviously needed some more money. And I went into this business angel meeting in Manchester, which I'd been trying for ages to get into. And there were 30 or 40 investors in there. And I was so confident that I was going to get investment that I had a big stack of business plans ready to give out. And I got to do my speech. I had 5 minutes to do my pitch. And actually, I noticed while I was talking that people started looking at their phones and being a little bit disinterested. And I actually looked to the back of the room and there was an old guy who had his head tipped back, his eyes closed, his mouth wide open, and he was actively snoring while he was asleep. And at that moment in time, I knew, I don't know if this is going to work. So I went back to my table and nobody came to talk to me about my idea. And I thought, right, I've spent 2 or 3 years on this project now. I'm going to go to the bathroom. And when I come back, I'm going to jump it back in my car, go back down to Bristol. And that's the end of this project. I'm going to cut my losses and call it a day. So off I went to the loo. And as I was coming out of the bathroom, there was a long corridor I was walking down, and one of the guys from the audience was walking towards me. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to call this guy and ask him for his advice. So I stopped him and I said, oh, you know, did you see anything you like? Have you had a good day? How did you find it? And this guy said, oh, actually, I really like your idea, but I just don't know if it's scalable and I don't fully understand the market. And we got chatting. And I managed to convince him to let me take him out for lunch a week later. And he actually ended up offering to invest in my idea. He gave me £60,000, and that was to cover a salary of £25,000 for a year and some other startup costs. and my partner and I quit our jobs in Bristol, moved up north to Manchester because we're both north anyway. And I started on this project, and my wife started her job as a solicitor in Liverpool. And I quickly realized that this project wasn't going to work because there was a bunch of guys in America at Stanford University, and they'd been given access to IBM's supercomputer Watson, and they'd basically created an earlier version, like an AI version of our product, which was obviously much more sophisticated. And I thought, well, unless we can do the same thing, it's going to be difficult for us to achieve this. And I was also having some problems in getting people on the platform, and I was running out of money. So I went to Devesh, who was the investor, and I said, listen, I think it's probably going to be best if I give you this money back because I'm not sure it's going to work. Here's some red flags. And he said, well, don't worry about it. We thought this might happen. And he went on to tell me a story about how he'd made his money in software distribution. And so he'd had a company called Codework in Stockport for about 15 years. And they'd actually grown over time to become Symantec's largest distributor in Europe. And he said, well, I'm actually thinking about, and he'd sold that business a couple of years previously. And he said, well, I'm actually thinking about setting up a new distribution company. Why don't I show you how to do that and you can run it? So I was like, okay. So he literally got his laptop out and started emailing people. And we closed about £5,000 worth of deals that afternoon. And so for the next 3 or 4 months, 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. every day, Devesh came and met me in our little rented desk space and showed me how to do software distribution, taught me all about, you know, gave me one-to-one training on sales, distribution, all the stuff about the channel that you needed to know. And then that company was called Distology. And we picked up Webroot as a vendor, and we were just trying to sell it to resellers. But Webroot was obviously a tool that was billed monthly. It could be multi-tenanted, multi-tiered. And so we just got a lot of MSPs expressing interest. And that's basically how I ended up in the space. You know, it was kind of like by accident that my first job in the software channel was as the owner of a distribution business.
It's a fascinating story. And I guess that shows it all started from that conversation, right? I guess it would have been so easy to leave that sort of angel investor meeting without speaking to anyone and just sort of walk out tail between your legs and never, yeah. You'd never have been here.
It really is crazy. I mean, it gives me goosebumps even today when I think about it, because, you know, if I hadn't have gone to the toilet at that moment, if I hadn't have thought, you know what, I'm going to stop this guy in the corridor, like none of the following 10 years would have happened. And, you know, I'm in a very fortunate position today as a result of that, of taking the chance to have that conversation and to ask Devesh for that piece of advice. And, you know, Devesh is still a friend of mine to this day and has been a long-term mentor and friend and advisor. And so, it's crazy how things work out.
Yeah, it is crazy because, I didn't know any of that. So, yeah, thanks for sharing. That's great background. One of the things you did mention, which I made a note of on my pad here, is around marketing and brand, because I think that's what a lot of people listening, certainly people that have come across sort of your companies, will know you for, I guess, because certainly with sort of Zsphere, it was quite a strong brand, but a sort of bold brand from a marketing point of view. I mean, was that something that you deliberately set out to create?
Yeah, it absolutely was. And, you know, I wanted something that was clear, and I thought it was really important for us to have a niche, a dedicated niche, and for that niche to be the MSP space. You know, the way that I feel is that you've got to pick a buyer persona that you really want to focus on and understand. And our target buyer persona was, you know, someone who I like to call senior decision dev, who's like a technical director at an MSP. And, you know, he tends to be the person in the organization who, you know, selects software products and purchases software products. And so I really wanted to understand senior decision Dave and work out what appeals to them and understand what's important. And so I think, you know, coming into the space as well, we identified quite early on that MSP was something that a lot of distributors struggle with, and also that there was quite a lot of bland, technically orientated branding in the market. And, you know, if you want to stand out, you've got to do something that's a little bit different. You know, I mean, might sound kind of silly, but, you know, we painted our walls pink. We went for something that was a little bit more attractive and no nonsense. And at the time, I don't even really think I appreciated how different that was. But looking back now, you know, it was. And, you know, and I made an effort to employ team members who were quite diverse and energetic and enthusiastic, and not necessarily, actually, most of the people that I employed weren't from a channel or a technical background. You know, I kind of brought them into the organization and tried to give them the opportunity to upskill into the job. I tended to hire based on personality and, you know, and that kind of thing. So, and that worked out really, really well. And, you know, I've now got several members of my former team that are, you know, in amazing positions, you know, in other parts of the sector. So that's good as well.
Yeah, amazing. And I really like Senior Decision Dave. I'm going to sort of try and research that. That's a great name. And one of the other things you mentioned earlier on, I know we're jumping around a little here, but it was your sort of sales background. And you said that, you know, something that you're sort of proud of. That's kind of what you do. Whereas a lot of MSPs, in my experience, I don't know whether you found this when working in distribution in your current role, is that they kind of struggle a little with sales. I think is partly because they're maybe more technically minded, whereas you said that you're probably not. I mean, do you think that MSPs are getting, is that still a problem within MSPs, or do you think that's improving, the sort of sales and marketing aspect?
Yeah, I do still think it's a huge problem. And I don't know if it's a problem that's going to go away. I think it's a problem that we might be able to mitigate. But the fact is that most MSPs, or, you know, most MSP leadership teams are formed of technical heritage individuals. And you tend to find that, you know, people either form an organization as a solo business owner, or they form an organization with friends with similar skill sets. And you know, rarely in MSP does there tend to be a combination of a technical leader and a revenue leader. And you know, I think the way that I see things going at the moment is that, you know, there's almost kind of like the rise of the super MSP, where we've got the consolidation of lots of MSPs being bought up. And, you know, if you look at Air IT as a good example, and these organizations then install, you know, well-structured and organized sales teams as part of a larger organization, and, you know, run pipeline systems and all the stuff that you'd want as part of a sales business. So I think, you know, MSPs that aren't in that category, you know, the MSPs that are run by small leadership teams with a technical heritage, do really seriously need to start thinking about bringing in revenue leaders at the core of the business. And, you know, they're going to need to offer these guys, you know, really, you know, potentially ownership in the business, meaningful salaries and packages. Because what I tend to see at the minute is a lot of MSPs kind of like dipping their toe into sales, because they'll go and hire, you know, a quite junior account executive or someone who's maybe not done MSP sales before, and just kind of like hope for the best, and they don't really know what to do with them. So, yeah, it's a huge problem. And I mean, sales is, you know, sales can be hard even for well-seasoned sales companies. So it's not a problem that's going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and it's a conversation we've had many times before on here around that particular problem. A lot of MSPs, certainly in the UK, I don't know if it's the same around the world, but they were founded by people that were probably good at computers and said, well, let's set up a business, probably all based around the time of Small Business Server from Microsoft coming along, and they built the business around that, and they've never had that sales experience, grown their business. They're probably at the age now where they're probably looking for an exit, but it's increasing those sales. And we've also heard so many horror stories, I guess, in inverted commas, around MSPs that have kind of dipped the toe, they've gone out, they've recruited a sales director, spent quite a lot of money on it, But then if they don't see results within sort of 2 to 3 months, they're sort of firing the sales director again. They're not kind of not building the processes involved and giving it the time to work.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the interesting thing about being in sales. You know, people tend to hire sales leaders or salespeople and think, okay, well, that person, you know, that's their speciality. They must make it work. But there are multiple moons that need to align in order to make a sale happen. You know, so you need to have a very efficient lead conversion path. You know, so if there's going to be an inbound lead, that needs to be responded to very quickly. That lead then needs to be provided with the right amount of awareness and educational content to fully understand what their problem is and how it can be solved. Then there's some, a little bit further down the line, there's like an evaluation phase where the prospect needs to understand how you can help them solve the problem. And then there's decision-making content and conversations that need to happen around, well, what does an engagement with my company look like? And so if there's any friction at any point there, that can basically be the end of the opportunity. And all it takes is, you know, a delayed response, a slightly vague answer to a question, you know, slightly inappropriate pricing. You know, there's all sorts of stuff that needs to happen. And so, you know, what you really need is to understand, you know, what it is you want to achieve with your sales strategy, how much money you want to make. And for example, take a look at what average customer value is. So if you're going to make 10 grand on a customer every year on average, but you want to make 100 grand, you know, so you need 10 new customers, that potentially means, based on the conversion rates that you've got, that you might need 100 or 200 leads inbound within that time frame. So then you've got to think about, right, well, where the heck do we get 100 or 200 leads from? And so, like, it's not just as easy as having a salesperson in there. It's a systematic procedural thing that needs to take place. And unless it's a key part of the culture at the organization, it's very, very difficult to succeed. And I'm really interested to see where things are going to go in the next few years, especially with the boomer generation of MSP owners. Because, you know, those are the kind of organizations that are less likely to implement meaningful sales strategies like that, but are still rich, you know, for acquisition and could potentially increase their multiples and exit if they did have that kind of system in place. So at the same time, it provides an opportunity for acquirers, because that might be something that an acquirer could come along and then implement to increase value quite quickly. So it's a really interesting dynamic. And it'll be interesting to see how that kind of pans out in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating, and I don't know how it's all going to pan out. But the next question was around challenges that MSPs are facing in 2024, as we've just moved into the new year and beyond. I mean, you've mentioned one of them already, which is the consolidation and the rise of the super MSP, I guess. But are there any other challenges you think that MSPs need to be aware of or have on their radar for 2024?
Yeah, I mean, I think the consolidation challenge is one that people are aware of. But there's something else coming up in the rearview mirror that I don't think people think about too much. And that is the very well-established channel that already exists and has existed for decades, that currently looks after the traditional software resale market. And, you know, so you look at organizations like Softcat, for example, who, you know, Softcat is the UK's largest reseller, very well resourced. And, you know, they just do sales all day long. That's literally all they do. So, you know, organizations like that are, you know, going to get savvy to the opportunity in the MSP space. And they're going to start creating MSP offerings, or have started creating MSP offerings, which will take away from, you know, what we might recognize as the traditional MSP community as we see it today. And you know, if you look at some of the recent data that Canalys put out about the MSP market, you know, so at the moment in EMEA, there are, you know, it says there are currently 145,000 channel organizations that are doing some kind of managed service. But only about 40,000 of those are what we would call pure play MSPs. And that's massively grown over the last couple of years. It was nowhere near that number before. So I think, you know, we're going to start seeing telcos, you know, so, you know, you've got Orange Cyber Defense, Telefonica, those kind of organizations already in the market. they're going to come along and start sweeping up stuff. Internet security, internet providers, IPs will come along and do the same thing. And, you know, it's almost kind of like being in a situation where back in, you know, the 90s when we had Woolworths on the high street or the local convenience store, you know, they kind of got wiped out by supermarkets. And I think we're in a similar situation now where smaller, locally exclusive MSPs will start to lose their larger SMB clients to these kind of organizations purely because they've got a slick sales process, a very clear and concise offering, and, you know, really clear pricing structures. You know, like I think that'll become a problem. I think the only saving grace, and you know, we shouldn't underestimate this. The only saving grace is the relationship that clients have with their MSPs. You know, there's a lot of trust that needs to take place in the relationship between a small to medium sized business and an MSP. And I think there's a lot of equity in that relationship. So that might be something that some of these larger organizations struggle to create, but I don't think it will stop them. You know, there's going to be a lot of stuff happening in the market in the next few years. And I think we're already starting to see the beginnings of that kind of thing happening.
Yeah, the relationship thing's interesting there, because I guess going back to the super MSP and these sort of boomer owners that are selling, I guess it's when they do sell their MSP is how those relationships are maintained as part of the larger super MSP. And can they keep those relationships, the personal relationships, going in the same way?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think there's an interesting question to be posed here, and is that will MSP services become commoditized? You know, I think it's there's been this, you know, local feel, like very supportive atmosphere around MSPs for a long time, but if there's a situation where, you know, you're an SMB and you can, you know, you meet a company with a nice brand and a nice account manager, and it's a nice clear understanding of what you're going to get, you know, so it's you know, whatever, 50 quid a month, and you get Microsoft and Service Desk and security, you know, it's £50 a month per user. I think, you know, no commitments or whatever. Yeah, do you know what? I'll go for that. And you know, all it takes is maybe a bit of extra creativity around some of the benefits that come, you know, some of the softer stuff that MSPs might not do. I think it's going to be interesting to find out whether the MSP market can be commoditized, and whether the relationship element really is as important, because I think relationships are super important, but they'll only ever get you so far. I think, you know, reliability and, you know, value for money is always going to be still at the top of the priority list for customers.
And on, you know, and I know I'm asking you to sort of predict something that we don't know yet, but if you were a kind of mid-size MSP and you're aware that was coming, whether that be from telcos or print or sort of super MSPs or whatever, or internet that are coming along, I mean, what would you be doing now if you're running an MSP to try and sort of mitigate that?
I'd be looking for marketing companies to buy. I would be going out and trying to find sales and marketing organizations that I can acquire to bring into my business, because, you know, at the minute we see MSP services largely as Service Desk, Microsoft, security, you know, and a few other maybe projects around the side. But as time goes on, you know, why can't we become specialists in CRM marketing? Why can't we offer graphic design services, AI implementation, and that kind of stuff? And, you know, it's going to be super important that these MSPs can potentially cast a wider net, but also create an abundance of leads along with a brand and a look and feel and a vibe that is exceptional. So if I was in a position where I was in an MSP that was maybe doing £1 to £2 million a year revenue, maybe I'd go and pick up some extra MSPs to kind of like expand my scope. But I absolutely would be looking for a marketing company to go and acquire. And in acquiring that company, you're then picking up some senior leadership who can perhaps mentor you and give you some advice on how to make it work, and also give a bit of an edge to the business as well.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's ever mentioned that before. So that's right. That's unusual advice, but yeah. Very, very pertinent, I think. So really useful.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, you know, MSPs are very special in the sense that they don't tend to have efficient sales and marketing organizations within the business. And, you know, you look at many other sectors out there and they have very heavyweight sales and marketing organizations. And so, you know, having the right kind of resources internally as part of a strategic, you know, plan can massively help you grow the business. And, you know, I think marketing agencies are out there ready for acquisition in the same way that MSPs are. There's a massive number of boomer-led marketing agencies that are ready for acquisition. So yeah, I think that's an opportunity that I've not seen anybody take yet. Maybe it's a little bit of out-of-the-box thinking, who knows, but I'd love to see that happen, and I'd be definitely following that journey with interest if it did.
Yeah, the same. And the sales, something just occurred to me again as you were speaking, was I know several MSPs, and this is multiple, so that have said to me in the past that they don't have salespeople, or they kind of almost market themselves as not having salespeople, as though it's some kind of dirty word within the MSP community. Yeah. I mean, I think that's dying down now, but that certainly was something that was spoken about years ago.
Yeah, it's, you know, this idea that sales is a dirty word, I think does still exist in our space. You know, to be honest with you, I think it's a very naive approach to take. You know, we don't exist as businesses without sales. Even if you're receiving multiple referrals for business and you as the business leader are the person responsible for converting that lead into a customer, I mean, how scalable and how sustainable is that? You know, are you going to do that forever? Do you want to work in the business or on the business? You know, do you want to have any kind of ability to step out of the business? And certainly when I ran my organization, I you know, my approach was to try and make myself redundant, in that I wanted to be in a position that I could step out of the business for 6 weeks, not receive a phone call. And when I got back, the wheels were still on and the business was doing well. And we got to that point in the end. And actually, you know, as a business owner, you don't need to be the one responsible for converting leads. That's not something that you need to be doing. That's a tactical function within an organization, not a strategic leadership function. And so you can employ someone to do that. And, you know, the way that I tend to think of it is, you know, people like to be sold to, right? So if you've got a good lead, if you've got a good sales qualified lead, somebody who's raised the hand and said, I've got a problem, that person then wants to be provided with advice and guidance and be given some expectations around what the process is, you know, and people enjoy that feeling. And it's the same, you know, it's the same feeling that you might get, say, for example, if you've had a good year and you got onto Mercedes, and you find this lovely car, and the guy comes over in a nice suit and says, hello, Mr. Tate, are you interested in the vehicle? And you say, yes. And he says, oh, excellent. And he asks you about, you know, why you like it. And then he takes you on this very like nice tour around the vehicle and says, you know, these are the features. I've got these leather seats, and this is the infotainment system. And, you know, this provides you the extra comfort when you're doing this, and kind of like give you that almost like what feels like VIP treatment. And, you know, you kind of like get enfranchised into that and you feel guided and kind of like held by it. And that increases the likelihood that you're going to buy. But what's actually happening there is you feel like you're being treated well, but they're actually selling to you. So, you know, you're going to be like, you know, you the guy offers you a coffee or a glass of champagne. Think, oh, do you know what? I really like this, and I really like this person. You know, I'll almost like do them a favor and buy the car. And, you know, and like sales, you know, can be done the right way and it can be done the wrong way. You know, I think we all get pestered a lot by salespeople. You know, God knows how many emails I currently receive every day of people trying to sell me data. You know, for the MSP industry, I must get 8 or 9 emails a day. And that's a pain in the backside. But when I've got a problem that I need to be solved, then I go and put my hand up somewhere. Like, what really annoys me is, you know, if I go down to Mercedes and they take one look at me and think, oh, I'm not going to go and help that person out, that's when I walk away. And so when, you know, you've got to create the situation where people know to come to you when they've got a problem that needs to be solved, and that when they do come, that you're the person or the organization that envelopes them in a warm embrace and takes them through the process. So sales has massively changed. You know, sales is changing year on year, really. And I think, you know, it's absolutely vital that MSPs get wise to the fact that the referral industry, the referral part of the industry, is going to die, and that business will get scooped up because there are people out there, you know, who are engaging with these people and, you know, not just giving them pestery emails, but, you know, inviting them to football games and inviting them to dinners and you know, kind of like schmoozing them a little bit. And those will be the organizations that end up getting the business in the end.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Great advice. And I guess that feeds back into what you were saying earlier around the having the strong marketing presence to be so that when people are looking to raise their hand to find an answer to a problem, then you're the guys that they will think of, which is and they will go to, which is really cool advice. So, right, change of gear slightly. Outside of the MSP space, what do you do to relax? So do you listen to books at Audible, or read books, or Kindle, podcasts, Netflix? What do you kind of do to in your downtime?
Well, you know, I've got an 18-month-old daughter, so she takes up a lot of my time, which is fantastic, and I'm massively enjoying parenthood. You know, we started a little bit late. I'm about to turn 41, and I will be honest, you know, bending down to get to the floor is harder than it used to be. But parenthood makes up a massive part of my life at the minute, and exercise is something that I really enjoy. I'm currently trying to do some form of exercise daily at the moment, and that's something that helps me out a lot in terms of, you know, when you're, you know, I work from home like many of us do these days, and so it can be quite isolating actually to be at home so much. So, you know, trying to get out of the house, do some exercise, is good. I've also got a golden retriever that I spend a lot of time with. So he obviously requires quite a bit of walking and attention. So those I guess are my three main things. But I am also very partial to a Netflix binge from time to time.
Yeah, well, the exercise side, you'll probably be surprised to know that in 2024, I've done some exercise every day so far.
Excellent.
Although I guess listeners probably won't realise today is the 4th of January. So it's probably, it's very early days. But
we should have said, we're getting there. It's the 8th of April. It's the 8th of April, and you've done it every day. And yeah, what exercise are you doing?
Well, put it this way, I've reactivated my Peloton account because it's been sat gathering dust. I don't think I used it at all last year. And so right. I thought January, that's it. I guess it's probably the busiest day of the year for Peloton HQ. I suspect people firing up their subscriptions again. So hopefully I can stick with that this year. I'll try and get out, like you say, being at home every day for a walk, which has been challenging in this. It seems to have been raining nonstop for the last week, but try and get out for a walk every day. I think a dog would help, like you say. I think that would probably help sort of focus that. But yeah, just trying to do a little bit more. I'm trying to start a little bit of jogging again. I used to run a little bit. So just try and, I've got, put it this way, 4th of January, I've got great intentions of this being the healthy year. But ask me again in June.
Yeah, it's new you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I'm impressed that you've still got your Peloton, because I had a Peloton downstairs in the kitchen, and I didn't use it for about 3 months, and my wife insisted that I get rid of it, you know, because it had become an expensive clothes horse. And so I sold it just when Peloton was, you know, diving really as well. So I sold it for next to nothing. And now I wish I hadn't, because I would love, you know, to have done the same thing and get on there again, but instead I'm having to go on to the local gym instead. So, but serves me right for dropping it off, I suppose.
No, but the gym's probably, you know, you get out, you see people, you kind of, it's probably a little bit more of a sociable experience than just sat in a spare room on a Peloton on my own. But
that's,
you know,
yeah. That's very true.
Okay, well, we're at time almost, but I've got one final question. You've given us lots of advice already, but we're speaking to MSPs here predominantly. I mean, have you got kind of, in addition to what you've already given us, some kind of tip to help them with their MSP business?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to be completely honest, I think I would say one key piece of strategic advice is, you know, just try and find a way to be famous for something. And something that MSPs really struggle with, I think, in this market is being able to stand out from the crowd, because there are so many, you know, IT companies out there, lots of similar names, lots of similar branding, lots of samey websites. And, you know, there are, you know, some of the great advice that you hear is, you know, find a niche. And I think that's really, really good advice. But I think also if there's a part of your service that you can tweak or change so that you can almost become famous for it, and kind of like sing from the rooftops about it, you know, like try and find that, because that's the kind of thing that, you know, gets people mentioning you on social media. It gets that's the kind of thing that people remember you for. And it's crazy. It's crazy just how, you know, years down the line, even something great that you did for a customer way back, you know, in the past can come back and, you know, bear fruit later on just because they had a good feeling about what you did. And that can be anything from, you know, sending a care package to a customer to, you know, running kind of like a free roundtable event and kind of like, you know, providing a lot of free advice. You know, or just like, you know, kooky stuff like, you know, send all your customers a teddy bear. You know, there's all sorts of stuff you can do. I think it's quite easy for us to get caught up in the day-to-day of running a business and kind of like forget about that kind of stuff. So my advice would be, yeah, find something to be famous for.
Yeah. And looking back, and obviously you've been practicing this, what you preach, because going back to the Zedsphere thing, I would have said, you know, you were famous for the marketing when I was kind of either an MSP or working with vendor and seeing you at events and the kind of stuff that you put out and the swag and everything, you were kind of famous for this sort of just being a little bit different and having this sort of real strong brand identity. So obviously you've kind of been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, yeah, I mean, and we definitely felt the benefit of that at the time as well. And it's also a bit of fun to be a bit different as well, isn't it? So, yeah, why not go for it?
Absolutely. Great tip and a great lesson. And I'm sure the listeners will take something from that. So that's it. We're at time. We've kind of covered quite a lot of ground. Thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Hopefully see you again on the road some point in the not too distant future. But yeah, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. And see you soon.
Yeah, great. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Catch you later.
So there you have it. Thanks to Rick for coming on, and he didn't disappoint. So all the recommendations were good. If you've got anyone else you want me to speak to, please let me know in the comments. Also, please remember to like, subscribe, comment, do what you can to help me grow this podcast. I really do appreciate it. But until next time, goodbye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using JumpCloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.